listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to episode 231 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
This week, we were going to look at the interesting situation involving Marvel shows on Netflix and also what this means for Disney's continuing plans for world domination, but also for the superhero film and TV genre as well. But first, Netflix has been hemorrhaging Marvel shows. What we lost? Who have we lost? We've lost
Luke Cage. We have lost
Iron Luke Fist. Cage.
Lost Iron Fist.
Defenders so wasn't really on the table for season two, so haven't really lost that, but it hasn't been. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just still kind of blame Tesco Value Batman for that.
Well, Iron Fist.
Yeah.
I haven't even watched season two, to be honest with you. I'm still halfway through season two of Jessica Jones.
Season two is better, but that's mostly because it's got more of what's her face?
We are still currently.
Oh no, Electra is not in.
We are currently stuck somewhere in the Punisher first season. Like, we haven't crawled out of that mess yet, and actually.
I haven't watched that last three episodes of that either. Thanks for reminding me.
Oh, God.
Shit.
Christ's sake.
But the thing is, though, okay.
Perhaps this is feeding into the issue.
Yeah, I mean, like, so they started off with Daredevil. Then we got Jessica Jones. Mm-hmm. Then we got Luke Cage, Iron Fist, then the Defenders, and then the Punisher, and then the subsequent new seasons of everything else. That's a lot of superhero going on in one place, all interconnected, all with different bits and pieces going. It's a lot to be wrestling with.
To be honest, DC's in the exact same situation over at CW, though.
Oh, gosh, yeah. So what we got now? We got
Except their series are worse.
So what we've got, they've got Arrow.
Yep, Arrow, Flash, Supergirl. They've got the Thingy of Tomorrow. DC's Legends of Tomorrow. And also now Black Lightning.
That's still going.
Yeah, I've yet to watch any of season two, but I quite enjoyed season one of Black Lightning.
Also,
I'm still on episode three of Black Lightning.
But then the other thing DC's also got is that you've got other DC-related stuff also happening. So you've got Krypton.
Batwoman.
Yep. Batwoman. Supergirl still happening?
Yeah. Titans.
Titans.
Yes.
That's a lot. Gotham's winding down finally, though. Yeah.
But then you also have Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which...
That's over for Marvel, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've obviously had the Inhumans, which, yeah.
Yeah, but the Marvel's extended...
No, you don't count that. You do not count the Inhumans, because that was a horrible mess.
I was going to say, but you also have stuff like Cloak and Dagger as well.
Yeah.
And it's basically just trying to keep track of your kind of comic TV shows is just like... No.
Also, isn't there like The Gifted, or did I imagine that?
The Gifted, although,
yes.
Is that part of the X-Men universe? Is that?
Yes, it is.
And you got Legion.
Yeah.
Legion as well.
I'm pretty sure you've got another one. Somewhere. Was the one with Maisie Williams in?
There's too freaking many of them.
No, that's going to be, she's in New Mutants, isn't she? The new film New Mutants.
Oh, it's a film, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, there's just so much between the two different houses, almost, as it were. And then the fact that the rights are separated out to the extent that they are, so that some universes obviously don't connect, some do, but it's also just a lot of blooming people with powers fighting assholes that may or may not have powers, but often probably money, and are being assholes. And it's just, is this what, like, the 19 late 50s, early to sort of late 60s was like, with like cowboy western shit everywhere?
Yeah, from what I can tell, anyway, because I wasn't around. I'm not that old.
I mean, the one thing that the superhero genre has over the westerns is that there's a lot more variety and diversity in their characters in general. That said, I'm not sure how much further out that they can go with that.
The thing is, also, for all this money being used to develop stuff that's based on existing IPs, because people are using it because they got rights to IP, so they don't have to go shopping around for something else and that. But it also means that then stuff that's maybe a tiny bit original, but is genre-like, isn't being developed.
Although, saying that, I mean, some of them are being developed, stuff like American Gods and whatnot.
Yep. That...
Yep.
So it's...
It's not to, I would say, the level it might have been. And then one of the only other comic book adaptations that is running around that isn't superheroes, because it's just based off of a regular comic book, is Wyona Earp. Because that's originally, I think it's IDW or Image or Dark Horse. What are those three published that originally?
I mean, I think basically, in a way, I feel like, to a certain extent, The Walking Dead has actually got something over other comic book based stuff in that
it's not superheroes.
Well, it's not just that. It's not just that it's not superheroes. It's the fact that it's actually sticking relatively close. It's not, you know, kind of taking inspiration from, you know, 30 years or 50 years or 70 years of comic books and mashing stuff together. It's more kind of like, they'll change like characters here and there and, you know, whatnot. But The Walking Dead is The Walking Dead. It's already got like this pre-programmed story, which it's kind of sticking to.
So to a certain extent. So just to clarify, we're moaning more about the fact that there's a lot of superhero comic book adaptations still happening, not that there's comic book adaptations happening. Because obviously stuff like Preacher.
Yeah.
Has been pretty good.
Yeah.
American Gods isn't a comic book, it's a novel, so but Lucifer was a comic book. But it's very Perfect not novel. Really based on it at all.
It's more based on the character and then plug things from it and then put it in a police procedural, which I like anyway. Kind of despite the police procedural thing, because I'm not really a fan of that. But Lucifer is a very weird one. And it's a little bit like if someone did Coronation Street, but it happened to have Doctor Who in it. You know?
That would probably make me watch it.
Don't, because the BBC will then make it, obviously, EastEnders, and then it's going to be really freaking depressing.
Oh, but the thing is, Russell T. Davis already got there with his bloody companion and et cetera, et cetera. I'm not opening that in the words.
But, okay, so with Netflix dropping stuff, obviously they know the numbers for stuff that they pay for and show. So. Yes. It wouldn't surprise me if, unfortunately, stuff hadn't been as promising as they wanted. Though the Cage suffering surprises me.
I think it's more down to the fact that Disney are going to start doing their own stuff.
But by the same token, Netflix have been dropping shows a fair amount recently.
Yeah.
I mean, example, Orange is the New Black. Yeah.
That'll be seven seasons, won't it? Seven years. So for an American TV series, that's actually done all right.
Yeah. I mean, it makes perfect sense to me dropping Iron Fist. It's just Luke Cage is the one I'm just a bit like, But then again, I've only seen the first season, so can't. But then they've been making so much of it. Like
they are, yeah. They
as
are.
as soon as I think about maybe I should finish watching The Punisher currently, obviously, another something's been released.
Yeah.
And it's actually kind of off-putting. The volume, it's like, I would actually like to, I mean, I liked the universe and all that, but I'd actually like to watch other things. You know, sometimes Supernatural, for instance. I mean, I know this is terrible, but...
I mean, is this kind of the downside to... Because I know we've kind of praised previously on the podcast about kind of basically dropping the entire season at one go. Is this necessarily the downside to it, whereby, you know, people go, ah, right, okay, well, we'll get ready to binge that, and then kind of a couple of episodes through, and it's like, ah, oh, no, I'm a bit bored, I'm a bit lost now, I can't be arsed, I'll kind of want to watch this other thing instead, and just forget about it completely. Is that the dark side to it, do you reckon?
I think it probably is.
Right, possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
You could argue that if something's, you know, on weekly, it, you know, you pay more attention to it over a longer period of time. But that's never worked for me. I just kind of start forgetting about it.
That's fair. I mean, it's for me, when something drops weekly, it's kind of like a bit of an event, and it's like I will sit in to watch that, you know, kind of program, and whether it be like half an hour to an hour. And I will know that I will be watching that. I won't be like, well, you know, I'm kind of watching it, but this one plot thread is kind of boring me. So when those scenes are on, I'll be on my phone and whatnot and miss this bit story or miss that bit story. And it kind of becomes almost like the episodes just kind of amalgam into one big one. So, yeah, I don't know. It's maybe they need to play about with it a bit.
But...
I will say that I will, you know, lead an armed revolt if any of them decide to go weekly instead of dropping, you know, entire seasons, because I want to be able to sit down and watch it.
Yeah.
It's the reason why we've watched one episode of The Good Place latest season, because I'm waiting for more episodes so we can just do you want another episode? Yeah,
fair enough. Well,
sorry, Cookie, what were you going to say?
Have you seen the news, though, about the new Disney streaming service?
Yes.
And one of the first shows?
I have not, and I genuinely haven't. That isn't just a, please tell us more!
So they've announced that... they have announced that one of the first Marvel series will be Winter Soldier and Falcon.
Right. Is this live action thing, or is this
animated?
Yeah. No. It's live action with the actual actors from the movies reprising the roles of Falcon.
Okay.
And Winter Soldier.
I'm really not sure how that's going to work.
And apparently, Scarlet Witch and Vision are going to get their own spin-off series.
It's just, what was it? Falcon and
Winter Soldier.
Winter Soldier. Yeah. When you say that, to me, it just seems like it should be like The Odd Couple. You know, they have to share an apartment.
Yes. Well, what was it in Robot Chicken where they had superheroes living together? Was it the real world, but it was superheroes?
Yeah.
It'll be like that.
Be like the Justice League.
Crazy, innit?
Also, you know, people will be. So, is Chris Evans going to be in it? Is Captain America going to be, you know, a guest in an episode? You know, because it's the Winter Soldier, isn't it? And you know, they're like close. I mean, really close.
Yeah,
not fandom close, because fandom close is a whole different level of close for those two. Stucky.
Fandom close is like Venn diagram close.
There are streaming sites which would host that, but it's not going to be not going to be Disney.
No, but the thing is that even with producing their own stuff, it's still going to fall into the trap of it's too much. I mean, we've said it several times. I think it's a theme that's coming up more and more as the podcast has progressed. But we are not short of content. in our lives. Like, and to sort of try and dominate one thing, especially if you have interconnected storylines, which if Disney is slowly pulling stuff over to their stuff, there's a high chance of it, because it's obviously going to tie in with stuff from the films. And it's just, that's a lot of crap to commit yourself to. That's more than, I don't know, like a monthly magazine publishing chapter by chapter some story by Charles Dickens. Like, it's a much bigger commitment.
I think part of the problem is that they've kind of, if you're going to do a connected world like that, do it like it started out with, like the Avengers was the connection point to the individual Marvel properties and spawned its own TV series and blah, 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 and stuff like that. And have it so that everything revolves around this big, you know, ongoing trunk. Rather than having everything kind of splitting off and, you know, kind of this year, oh, we're going to do Age of Ultron. And by the way, there's going to be virtually nothing said about Age of Ultron in any of our TV series or any of our other films. It doesn't have, like, any consequences outside of the film itself, it feels like. And I think, basically, they're doing their connected world kind of a bit of a disservice by doing that. I feel like, anyway.
I'm still thinking of Odd Couple type sitcoms. I'm still there in the thinking, you know, I'd watch that.
But
just like Falcon being like, hey, Winter Soldier, come give me a hand. Oh yeah, very funny.
But then winding this back around to, okay, not just the there's too much content, but there's just too much of this genre kicking about. And it shows no sign of really abating. Because it does feel like the whole, like, it's people with powers up against enemies who either have powers or money or crazy brains. And it's a very flat dynamic a lot of the time, the way it's presented, because it's just kind of like, here's the bit of lore that differentiates this battle between good and evil that's really pared down, so there's not much of a nuance to it. There's not enough grey a lot of the time. Like, these are good guys, these are bad guys. You know, here's a story about these two parties coming to know each other and then trying to defeat each other.
I mean, one could argue that, I mean, one could argue that I don't think the superhero genre has kind of captured the spirit of, you know, our world today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're so kind of divided, and yeah, it kind of feels like, you know, you had Civil War and whatnot, but, you know, it still doesn't quite say the same thing as, you know, the divisions in our society at the moment.
That just reminds me of some of the comic skaters lot who have, you know, who's, I was reading X-Men when it didn't have politics in it. And it's like, were you? I don't think you were.
Huh.
And there was something else as well where they that was it. You know, this is kind of related in a tangenty way. You should be used to this by now. Cliffy B said that you know, people are a bit surprised when they find out that he's a bit lefty. And he said that stuff like Gears of War had a an anti-war thing, you know, going on with it. And there was someone who said, oh, you should have made it slightly more obvious, the subtext, you know, for people to get it. And I'm thinking, no, even when it's blindingly bloody obvious, people will not see it, whether it's in sci-fi or, you know, just contemporary fiction, or whether it's, you know, superheroes, where, in, you know, instead of people of different skin color, you have people of different abilities.
Yeah.
And unless you have, you know, one of the characters at the start, and Cookie will know what I'm talking about with this, doing a He-Man style moral, you know, this is what we found out from today's episode.
Maybe that's what we need at the end.
You have that. I think you do, because some people will not bloody see it.
I would love to see like a, you know, PSA kind of thing after every episode of like, you know, Daredevil or something like that. I mean, like, you know, oh, by the way, you know, we noticed that you watched the episode today, so I'm just going to talk about the themes in it and how the lore does actually, you know, affect you on an individual level. And blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
No, the PSA will be about there aren't really that many ninjas in the world. Don't worry. Stay happy.
Yeah, it's out. Well, thankfully, you know, watching season 3 of Daredevil, yet to spot a single ninja.
Good.
And it's like, thank God for that. I feel like I'm back in the modern world where there's a story about an intensely corrupt, you know, criminal bloke who's in business and he uses his money and corruption to corrupt everything around him, including, you know, political and judicial and law enforcement systems, which thankfully would never happen in the real world.
I can't remember. I've got a book somewhere on my Kindle that looks about the rise of comic book genre stuff, like, since 9/11. And I do still wonder, I mean, we've brought it up again on the podcast before, but if it's that continuing uncertainty in our own world which makes us want to watch apparently big moral battles on screen without all these real-world trappings, like presidents who say completely one thing and then change their tune when it comes to the assassination of a political journalist in a foreign embassy, or, you know, about an entire country throwing away its lot in the world, or election of fascist presidents after a former military junta was like gotten rid of like in the last 20 years, or, you know, it is the crazy real world just too much, and we have to have all these very simplified a lot of the time black and white fights happening in popular media.
Yeah, I mean, kind of thinking about stuff like pretty much Iron Man, the first three Iron Man films, the first guy was against Tony because he was greedy. The second one was against him because of revenge. And the third one was against him because he was mean to him that one time.
Yeah, well,
I mean, if Iron Man films were based on any level of reality, it would have Tony getting himself in the shit for talking about potentially investor-sensitive information right in the public forum and having the SEC come down on his ass. Do I need to spell out what reference to for that?
Yeah,
one?
I can't think of any tech billionaires that would be stupid to do that.
Who like putting cars into space and shit.
Definitely not. No idea.
Yeah, like, there's none of that kind of real world elements to a lot of the stuff. Sometimes, and even sometimes when you think they're finally tackling properly an issue to do with ethnicity or dyspora or like just being treated like crap, actually, you know, like minorities being treated like crap and stuff, or like different genders being treated like crap, it's just kind of like, huh, they still can't quite. Like, we have to have this weird allegory going on, which then still somehow fails to properly tackle the matter sometimes. Sometimes it don't.
Which film are you referring to in that respect with the allegory?
Any.
Okay.
Like, it, except for the X-Men movies, at least when Magneto is given the chance to have a heart, so not three. That just about, they manage it. Nobody else does. So, like, the first two films. And obviously, like, First Class.
I think that's one thing that at least the original lot of films did quite well, is that it humanises people, even when they are bad guys. You know, kind of Magneto's Brotherhood of Mutants and stuff like that. And it's like, they're not all bad, they're just misguided.
Oh, mind you, I'm being a bit sort of down on something like Spider-Man Homecoming, because the Vulture is quite an interesting enemy.
That yes. was actually a well-done film, because it tied in really well to the, you know, to like Avengers and stuff.
But going back to that Westerns analogy, there's too many fucking superheroes running around different sizes of screen at the moment. Too many.
They're just everywhere.
They're everywhere.
They are definitely, because, I mean, you are pretty much, it's gone from once or twice a year to pretty much every single quarter there is at least three superhero movies.
Mm.
Followed by God knows how many TV shows. That's before you even start looking at the cartoon shows.
I'll tell you what, I don't know what the hell's going on with the DC movie universe at the moment.
Well, it's been scrapped, hasn't it? Now it's now the DC Extend... No, DC Worlds or something. It's not the Extended Universe, it's been classed as DC Worlds. So pretty much they're happy to do whatever they want now. And just mix
so please,
it in.
Please just do something, so long as it's slightly better than the crap that's been put out.
The thing I don't also
the trailer for Aquaman actually looks quite good fun, to be honest.
The thing I also though don't understand though is okay. Let's take this to another industry that has had too many iterations of the same thing in a short period of time.
I think
not quite. I'm thinking video games. Okay. I'm thinking.
Ooh.
Rhythm music games and the sudden rise and fall, how quickly that happened, because you had a lot of them coming out and then it's all kind of, you know, died back down again. But in a short period of time, you had a lot of development in that. And actually, if you consider the amount of money spent on developing all of those, way less than a lot of the Hollywood films or TV series with superheroes that we've been mentioning. And, like, the games industry quickly learned they can just keep bringing stuff out. I mean, where is the saturation point for comic book things? Because it's like, well, superhero stuff, because it's like, is it when the cost gets too high versus what's being made at the box office? Is it when you don't actually have quite as many bums on seats? Is it when you, like, have realised finally that maybe you've alienated, like, everyone over the age of 50? Because I have a feeling that's something that's going to be happening at some point pretty soon. And considering that the world's population is getting older, I wouldn't say it's going to be a while before you've got a huge chunk of older population across the world that likes superhero stuff. And yet they've got money to spend, but they're not being... But then, and we're getting to that point now where we've got people in older generations who can just about navigate a bit of Netflix, or obviously can go to the local cinema and buy a flipping ticket and go sit in a screen. And the thing is that there's so much sort of big blockbuster superhero stuff going out. I feel like if you look at the scheduling for a lot of cinemas, certainly in small ones versus like big ones, it does sometimes feel like stuff's getting squeezed out. That might be like a smaller budget, dramas, romances, even regular action films.
I mean, I think to a certain extent, part of the issue that the superhero genre will have that the cowboy and you know, kind of films didn't have is merchandise. So that I think that will play a big factor into it. You know, the fact that they will produce toys and whatnot for absolutely every single fucking Marvel and DC film out there, new iterations of them as well, just so that they can, you know, sell more shit. And I think that will be a big factor in it as well. As soon as it's not just the film itself that tanks, it's also the merchandising that tanks, then you'll start to see. And especially if they have like several films in a row that do that, then that will be like warning sign.
I think I think we're starting to see that, because I don't know if you noticed this, but we are starting to see, rather than just superhero movies, we're now starting to see reboots making appearances on a more regular basis as well. See, and I don't know if that's you know, if that's going to become the next norm, because they've already announced they're working on the Labyrinth reboot or sequel, which I still can't get my head around. How are they going to do that?
No, they're not working on that. They're just, that doesn't exist.
See, I think
the
director of The Living Dead is doing it, apparently.
Nope, no one's doing it. It's not being worked on. No.
We've obviously got the extended universes from like Hasbro with Transformers and now the Bumblebee movie. That's going to potentially spin out to... Oh, we've got the He-Man movie as well that's being worked on. Where Skeletor is now his half-brother.
What?
Didn't you hear that?
No.
Yeah, they've announced Skeletor will be his half-brother to make it...
Why? Know,
because apparently on most movies, TV shows, it's all got to be interlinked with family relationships and all that jazz. And yeah, it's just bollocks.
I can't wait for the World War II reboot where they... It turns out that Churchill and Hitler actually went to the same school, and it turns out that blah, blah, blah. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Well, that's the other thing that was in the news this week. The Call of Duty movies hit production as well now.
No.
See, I think there's...
I'm starting to wish that this cup of cider was...
bigger?
About twice the size, yes.
Yeah. I think when it comes to reboots nowadays, especially because it's kind of going back to like the 80s a lot of time, is the fact that it's kind of our generation that were really, really excited and whatnot about, you know, kind of stuff that they saw when they was a kid. And so they're kind of aching to bring it back and aching to give it like new life and whatnot. And the companies, you know, behind it are just like, you know what, these are selling well, so we'll throw some money at you. And hopefully it will generate even more money for us. So you definitely have the kind of conflict between, you know, basically nostalgia for the media creators and the financial, you know, kind of incentive.
I am all for nostalgia, but come on, some things should just be left alone. I mean, I don't know if Retroid's seen this yet, but they've even rebooted Magnum PI.
I'm just going to go get some more cider.
Now, if you look hard enough on Dave Internet, you'll find it, because the first four episodes are already out there.
Oh, blimey.
No, but it's so 80s. Is it still set in the 80s?
No, it's set in today's world, but it's just as cheesy as the 80s.
But why? He went around wearing, you know, Hawaiian shirts, and it was 80s.
There are still a few Hawaiian shirts in there.
Just no.
How many reboots do you think have actually worked?
Do you know, I don't think we can really complain about, you know, sort of reboots and reimaginings and that until somebody else has written the equivalent of either the Odyssey or the Iliad, and it just gets reiterated like nobody's fucking business across time and cultures.
I think some of the reboots have been quite good, the way they've handled it and sort of brought it into today's realm.
Do you know, I really like the remake of RoboCop.
I think...
that was not good, that one.
Part of the problem with reboots in general is that they're kind of damned if they do and damned if they don't, in the sense that definitely, if they stick too closely to the original source material, then it's not very fun for people because they've already seen the movie before or seen the TV series before. But if they stray too far from it, then they risk alienating their existing audience.
They're bastards for wrecking my childhood. Yeah, no.
Whereas, as an example, I still think that the Total Recall, you know, new one that they did was a reasonable film. I did not hate it.
And the new RoboCop film, like Emily said, was a reasonable film.
No, it wasn't.
You've got to have Paul Van Verhoeven ultra violence all the bloody time. It's just not doable.
No, that wasn't my issue with it. I felt it missed the point.
I actually felt it had more of an emotional point than the original, because you actually cared about the main character more, because he had a proper emotion. He could actually
I disagree, because I think it missed the point of that aspect. It just, to me, it didn't. I wanted to like it, but
the point of all the Robocop movies are, do not privatize law enforcement, or else you are fucked. That was the point of all the Robocop movies.
Couple that with
one of them. The other is you cannot repackage humanity.
But
by the same token, I think one of the things that the original
and the only Robocop film is the original first one. Yeah. There were no sequels. There was not a TV series. There was not a cartoon.
But I would buy that for a dollar.
With his jetpack.
Yes.
But I think one of the issues with the original Robocop,
other than the ultraviolence,
is the fact that, in essence, because he was far more machine than man, there was kind of almost no point to him.
I disagree.
His humanity kind of almost added nothing, or virtually nothing, to it.
See, that's what I thought they got with the new film.
Yeah.
He was more human.
Exactly.
I thought...
There were aspects
that I liked with the new one. I liked the him complaining, you know, take these things off me.
Yeah.
Where they, you know, they took all the machinery, you know, away bit by bit and showed him what was left.
Mm.
Because I thought that was, you know, that was a pretty much the same as in the original, as in, you know, there's very little.
Mm.
But yeah, I just think they, yeah, it just didn't chime for me. I might rewatch it and end up liking it. I mean, I've done that with a few films. If you remember, I didn't like Avengers until I rewatched it, and then, you know, I reassessed it. But yeah, I'm not sure whether
I do really like it when that happens, when you kind of rewatch a film that you hated the first time around, and something that just clicks, and it's like, I see what they're going for this time.
It's nice that. Going back to sort of the superhero things about the movies.
Yeah.
Just to bring it up, because it is very recent. In fact, it was only reported 2 hours ago.
Ooh.
So Ewan McGregor is apparently being approached to play Black Mask in the new Birds of Prey film.
Hmm. Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. And I just hope that they really don't screw the whole thing up. So, you know, can we have a good Birds of Prey film?
Yes. Yeah, that would be ace, to be fair.
To be honest, I've never actually seen any Birds of Prey type thing, so.
It did a really, really. No, that wasn't Birds of Prey, was it? The TV show?
I think I've vaguely heard something about that, but I know that it was kind of cancelled either after the first season or before the end of the first season.
It wasn't a great TV series, to be fair. It was, just not very good at all. Yeah, it was. Yeah, there was one.
Yeah, I am aware there was one, and I've seen a little clip of it, and it did seem quite poor. Yeah.
Shall we move on to what everyone's been up to?
Well, shall we do sort of like a roundup?
Or roundup?
Yeah.
Okay, so the market's oversaturated even at this point. It's probably going to get even more oversaturated. The other thing we haven't considered is the fact that Disney's purchase of Fox means that more Marvel rights.
We can actually have X-Men versus Avengers.
Oh, it's going to be fucking ridiculous. So it's just going to be more saturation of the market with more and more before they realise.
I think the big thing is that they have to change up the formula of good versus bad and have it something far more interesting, where the hero is not all they're cracked up to be, or they have flaws that they have to try and overcome, or, you know, this or that. And it's because at the moment it seems like, a bit like, you know, bad guy rises.
Tried to do with Venom.
Sorry?
A bit like Sony have tried to do with Venom.
Yeah.
But it's,
you know, I mean, obviously not to within the boundaries of the of how far the character can go. You know, yeah. you don't want it to be like, oh, Thor actually changes his mind and decides to kill all humans.
Do you know what I actually think would be a really good spin on that right now? And that would be the Ultimates.
Mm.
An alcoholic Captain America.
Alcoholic Iron Man. No, wait, they sort of did that, but then didn't.
Yeah, they
didn't really follow it up properly, yeah. Did they? But yeah, if they were looking at sort of the darker side of it, the Ultimates would be the perfect sort of way into it, in my opinion. Because the Ultimates was quite dark.
Mm. I mean, I haven't rewatched Civil War since the cinema, but I feel like there should have been more in the way of ideological talking in there, because it just felt like there was a split between Tony and Captain America.
Mm.
You know, kind of almost like a conversation about them being on different sides. And then It was like, oh, okay, let's all go for him for a battle. I was like, what?
The problem was they tried to cram so much into Civil War that it just wasn't done. But you could tell that Civil War really helped with Infinity War, because they were able to take the criticism of Civil War and refine it a lot more into Infinity War. And I think that's how Infinity War became a really good film.
Yeah.
In my opinion, because they obviously listened to some of the criticism they were getting about Civil War and refined it to actually focus on areas that they never showed in Civil War to flesh things out a bit better.
Hmm.
You know, the storytelling was a lot stronger.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason for that is because they kind of broke it up into smaller groups.
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
But, I think, obviously, Captain Marvel will be quite good. And then you'll have the sequel to, you know, Infinity Wars, which, you know, is obviously gonna have like lots of people watching. After that point, I'm not sure what's going to happen.
It's a new Spider-Man film, isn't it?
To kick off. Yeah, well, I mean, there's meant to be like several new, you know, kind of stuff going on in terms of, you know, kind of, say, for example, Black Panther sequel, or, you know, Doctor Strange sequel.
Oh, no, the new Spider-Man film is pretty much wrapped filming.
Ah, nice.
It's actually going to be out in June, a month after Avengers 4.
Interesting.
To kickstart phase 4.
But yeah, I think they're definitely going to have to be careful about stuff. I mean, they have done previously that they have adapted, but obviously because the cycles of the films kind of take, you know, kind of a couple of years to develop. Yes. I think, you know, we're going to start to see some interesting stuff happening in a couple of years' time.
I hope so, yeah.
To try and adapt to it at the very least. DC, on the other hand,
it kind of ruined their chance there. Wonder Woman was like the best one of the lot.
Brilliant. Wonder Woman is really good. Aquaman looks fun. And Shazam actually looks like a really good film as well.
I completely forgot about Shazam.
But there's no interconnection. There's no.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to be anything connecting them all. So
really?
No, so I think DC, because they've announced that it's basically going to be the DC worlds, so you'll be able to have different versions. I think at the moment, that's probably the safest bet for them. So the new Joker standalone film is set in a different universe, I think, or it's an origin film as well. And then you're going to have the new Joker and Harley Quinn film as well, with Jared Leto and Margot Robbie.
Mm.
It's all going to get a bit confusing.
Sounds it. I mean, it wouldn't be so much of an issue if they were to turn around and say, oh, this is actually set on Earth such and such.
Yeah.
You know, actually try and bring in the multiverse a bit to it,
yeah,
as it were.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, if you're going to do it, you may as well.
Yeah.
Thinking that one of the strengths I can see of, you know, again, this is bearing in mind that I wasn't never a fan of, you know, the superhero comics. And, you know, particularly not a fan of Marvel, but that's mostly because I saw their business shenanigans in the 90s. I think Marvel has the upper hand because they've managed to wrestle themselves away from the utter crap films that they used to do. I mean, just awful. And they've got the coherent vision.
Yes.
And they've managed to do it so that they can touch on a lot of different, you know, fandoms and genres.
Yeah.
So you've got the where, you know, we're on the run type series, like things like The Gifted. You've got the racism allegory in things like X-Men. Mm. You've got sci-fi in stuff like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've got your sort of, you know, general superhero shenanigans and things like Avengers and your big team-ups. So you've got stuff going on and those can be concentrated on individually.
Mm.
Whereas, the way DC's done it, I've just been utterly baffled at what they've been doing. Because to my mind... Yes, and I have no idea why they did that, because they just ended up being expensive messes.
Because they wanted the cash cow.
They don't hey, Marvel's doing it. We used to be big with, you know, the Superman films and, you know, the Batmans.
I mean, in a way, if it weren't for the Dark Knight trilogy, I think DC could have actually got in a lot quicker.
Yeah, but the thing about the Dark Knight trilogy is that they're an auteur piece.
Mm.
Like, you would not have those films the way they are without Nolan.
That's very true.
Unlike every other single superhero thing that seems to be happening now, considering that the likes of Disney have now dropped, like, Gunn and stuff, it's like, well, you're not going to have that singular vision happening anymore. Like, stuff's not going to potentially gel as well, or it's going to be a completely different style.
Weren't there rumours that Gunn is going to be working on the next Suicide Squad?
That's what I heard, yeah.
Yes, please.
So that could work. You know, he can do that, but they need to be able to leave him or whoever to it.
I mean, to be fair...
I'd be quite happy.
To be fair, the amount of directors that started off in the Marvel cinematic universe and have since been like, okay, well... yeah, and switching over to DC, I mean, Patty Jenkins was meant to be the original director for Thor 2.
Really?
I'm pretty sure.
I didn't realise it, though.
Yeah, because that's why... the one that played Jane...
Natalie Portman.
Natalie Portman, that's the reason that she kind of stuck around. And then once, Patty Jenkins, was kind of fired from it, and she was like, I don't want to do it anymore then. Oh, by the way, we've got your contract here saying that you must do it. Fuck.
Yeah. I'll just say, going back to what, you know, mentioning, you know, the Dark Knights.
Mm.
Okay.
I think they did everyone... who was wanting to do superhero material, a massive favour. Because when he took on Batman, you'd had several cheesy, crap Batman films, which, you know, they were successful, but they were cheesy tat. They were just objectively bad films. They were the idea of what superhero... you know, films should be from someone who doesn't like superheroes.
Hmm.
And, you know, that's been the issue with superheroes, for several decades. People seem to respond to those, so we'll play up the camp nonsensicalness. And that's a lot of the time, that's not what people like about them. So they go off the boil. So Nolan comes along, does his trilogy, completely reinvents, characters like Joker. It's not just I am the clown prince of mischief, and I'm going to do these things because, and it turns him into a real psycho. So yeah, that's got up and downsides when it comes to where that's gone from since then, but it ended up being a serious series of films which were successful, and they treated their subject matter intelligently.
Yep.
And I do reckon if it wasn't for Nolan's Batman films, then we wouldn't have had the big success that they would have felt too much like we need to cheese up, Iron Man.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
So, it was, we can do it this way, and you go, okay, we'll try it, and successful. And that's where we are now.
Definitely.
So, thank/blame Christopher Nolan.
Yeah. Okay, I think we've said everything that needs to be said on that.
Yep.
So then,
we'll be done.
Retroid, what have you been up to?
Well, I have been waterproofing my shed. Amazingly, I know it's awesome. It's very, very interesting. Other than that, we've been watching Daredevil season 3, which, contrary to what I've seen some people say about it, I thought it started very slowly indeed. I the first few episodes I just couldn't really be arsed, and it took until about 4 or 5 for me to really start paying attention to it, because I was bored.
That's never a good sign.
Yeah, not a good sign. I call it iron fisting. I don't, but I've got to get in a dig on that. So we've been enjoying that, and that's good. Has anyone else watched Killing Eve?
No, but no. I've got a friend who knew it was awesome before everyone else realised it was awesome, and she's been bugging me to watch it for ages.
May I also bug you to watch it?
Oh, God.
It is very good. I really quite liked it.
Okay.
What's it and about? The titular character Eve is a relatively low level worker in the British intelligence agency, and she's got an interest in serial killers. Particularly female serial killers, and she's the first episode. She's in a meeting where she's more or less dragged in by her superior, and they're talking about this random murder, one of another random murders that they can't seem to get their heads around. And they go, oh well, it's not important. It's clearly it's someone random who's done it, and she asks, was it a woman? And this puts her superior's nose out of joint, and he says, of course it wasn't, and the surveillance footage turns out there wasn't. That's a spoiler. And she ends up investigating it herself. And also at that meeting was her boss's boss, who knows there's a female serial killer, but they can't work out how she's doing it. So she recruits Eve to investigate this mysterious killer, who's also known as Villanelle.
Villanelle?
Yeah.
Okay.
Murdering people on order. And it's just the sheer joy that she takes from, committing these murders. It's just she manages, she's a British actress who puts on a Russian, faint accent. And she, I think she's only in her 20s, but she really does manage to be terrifying on screen. You can truly believe that her character is a psychopath. And the most terrifying thing in the world would be just to be in a room with her, because there is no question of, you know, beating her, getting away from her. There's absolutely no, that's not going to happen. If she, you know, if you get away, it's because she wants you to, and she'll take great pleasure in cutting you like a fish.
That
it's a very good series. I don't want to spoil anything else about it, okay. But it's international in nature. It was made by BBC America.
Ooh, okay.
Even though it's set mostly in Europe, large parts of it set in London, and it's great to see a female Asian lead as well in the character of Eve. I can't remember the actress's name. Damn it! But yeah, I've seen her in a few things, and it's about time she's had a main role. It's just a very good series, and it's all up on iPlayer. Now, so that feeds my box set.
Cool.
Itch, because I've seen a few people say, "Oh, this is great." Watching it, great. And we were at a bit of a loose end of things to watch, so I just said, "Should we watch this? What's it about?" I think it's a serial killer. I knew very little about it. And we watched it, and it was, "Do you fancy the next one?" Yeah. "But how about another one?" Episode 3. Said, "Yeah." So, yeah, we really enjoyed it, and we zipped through it in a few nights.
Cool.
Let's see. What else? I'm pretty sure there was something else we watched. Oh, I can't think of it right now. But, yeah, so everyone should go watch Killing Eve, and everyone else should go finish watching whatever seasons they are partway through of, things on Netflix, for God's sake, people.
No. Honestly. No. No. No.
Cookie?
Yes.
Hello. So this week I went and watched Bohemian Rhapsody.
Woo!
Which was bloody brilliant. So, yes, biopic of the rock band Queen and Freddie Mercury. Very well done.
He's just a poor boy. Nobody loves him.
Absolutely. It goes all the way up to his scene-stealing, show-stopping performance at Live Aid. And it was really, really enjoyable. It was emotional at times. I've seen some people saying that it doesn't really go into Freddie's dark relationship with his family and stuff, but
the main complaint I've seen is it doesn't go into Freddie's sexuality enough.
Yeah, and that's something that hadn't happened to fracture his relationship with his dad and stuff. But to be honest, the impression I've always got from reading books about Freddie and listening to interviews and stuff, that's not what he would have wanted in the first place. So it actually shows a bit more respect, because he wanted to be known as the entertainer, the fun one, the wacky one. Do you know what I mean? So actually, to not go delve too far into it, I think showed a bit of respect. It does touch on it, and it does.
It touches on it in quite a pained way. Yeah.
Like absolutely.
It's not simple. It's very complicated what they show on screen. And they definitely give a real, Malick and the writers give a real good go at showing the struggles
he had
internally about it.
Yeah, about being scared of being on his own and not having anybody, his family around him. And I have to say, Rami Malick was brilliant. He was just absolutely brilliant as Freddie. So, yes, it's definitely worth watching. Definitely worth going to see if you're at loose end and you don't want to watch any superhero movies or Halloween movies. Bohemian Rhapsody definitely gets a thumb up for me. Obviously, been watching Doctor Who, which I'm really, really enjoying, with Jodie Whittaker.
Yep.
I think she's
bloody
brilliant as the Doctor. So, yes, Bradley Walsh is actually winning me over as well.
He won me over in the first episode. He's like, okay, yeah, he can do, you know, dramatic roles.
He was okay in the first episode, but I still would have preferred Granny to be there. But as it's, you know,
yes.
His character, to see how he's actually dealing with the loss of Grace and that, and how Bradley's actually, how Bradley's turning that, how Bradley is performing it, has really got me on board. Really, really good.
I have been enjoying it, but see, you've reminded me now. So, you know, got some think, you know, some thinks. Me has some thinks about Doctor Who. First of all, varying levels. So you've got, oh, I'm a scary tooth man. Yeah, tooth fairy gone bad in the first episode. Which is and then, you know, second episode, that, you know, that was fine. That was probably, you know, I quite like that. That was, you know, the most, to me, Doctor Who episode where they're trapped on the desert planet.
Oh yes, yeah, I like that. Yes.
Yeah. Let's see, third one, I really like the Rosa Parks episode, but unless there's going to be, you know, unless that, you know, the bad guy, the time traveler, you know, the time traveler from the Rosa Parks episode, you know, pops up again. He was just shite.
I have a feeling that he will pop up again.
He better had, because he was just a bad.
In fact, quite frankly, I think they're setting.
It was like I'm hoping that was, you know, that was my thought when, you know, when watching it, because I thought, you know, either this is a shite bad guy, or he's going to pop up again, especially because they, you know, they do zap him to another time.
But I mean, considering that in the first three episodes you have the gun of three villains, as it were, that actually get away.
Yeah.
You know, that's like,
yeah,
I have the feeling that you're going to come back later.
But I certainly hope so, because it just seemed to be I'm a bad man, time traveling racist. What's your motivation? I'm a bad time traveling racist.
And well, I mean, considering the fourth episode had Trump but not Trump, as the
I do want to mention that one, because I think that was that the only one that was solely written by Chris Chibnall.
The Arachnid one.
Arachnids in the UK.
Yeah. Because that was a poor episode.
Emily,
I spent most of it hiding behind my Kindle. There we go.
Because you're not fond of spiders.
No, much nope.
Yeah. Yeah, I would just say my other half only saw maybe about half of the episode directly. The rest of it, just listening. And but yeah, I just thought this is a bad, you know, this was it's Halloween spooky weekend. Can we have something spooky? Spiders are spooky. Let's do one with big spiders. There we go. Job done. Is it really? That's the best you can do. That to me, it felt like a Pertwee era Stuck on Earth story. Because it's, oh, there's a you know, toxic tip, and there's people just dumping things into it, and it affects the, you know, the local creatures, and in this case spiders. And it's, oh no, it's, you know, bad capitalism. It's like, yeah, I've seen this, and you know, the Doctor was wearing a, you know, a fabulous purple velvet coat when he was dealing with this the first time around, instead of giant space maggots or whatever the hell it was. I can't remember.
Oh no, Chris Chibnall wrote the first episode as well.
Yeah. So far, two for two with the bad villains. But yeah.
He wrote the second episode as well.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah. On his own?
Yeah.
Okay, you know, I will, you know, that's good. I you know, I liked that one.
The third episode with Rosa Parks was written by Chris Chibnall and Mallory Blackman.
Mm. it's just, you know, there is a GIF online from his episode of Torchwood where it's the bikini cyber lady.
I think you should just let that go now. Just let it go, mate. Just let it go.
I can't let it go.
Just let it fucking go. Just let it fucking go.
First, to, in order to
let it go.
Oh my god! Did you hear it? I've got Cookie's swearing
with barbecue sauce.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
But yeah, it's out there. The bikini cyber lady punching a pterodactyl.
Just whilst we're talking about Doctor Who, can we talk about the fact that there's not going to be a Christmas special this year and that the special is going to be at New Year's?
Sorry, pardon?
There's no Doctor Who's Christmas special this year. It's just going
Cookie
to be...
Cookie didn't know!
It's just going to be something at New Year's.
Well, point of view, you're getting a strict, stern letter. This is just bollocks.
What do we pay his bloody license fee for? It's about the only.
That's like... called correctness gone mad, not having a Doctor Who Christmas special.
Actually, at this.
What are they placing it with? Bloody Mrs. Brown's Boys version 2. What?
I think all my license fee money at the moment, the only there's three things I'm getting out of it. Doctor Who, which I find quite hit and miss for myself personally, though I can enjoy it. BBC Radio 6 Music. And sometimes Spotlight.
There is local news. There is also the MASH report.
I like it, but it doesn't get advertised enough in the places where I'm at for me to know when it's on.
I play.
Is that just because you're one of the liberal elite?
No, it's because I'm not a broadcast television viewer much at all anymore. So unless there's like a flipping post on social media or something going, oh, by the way, the Nash report's back, I probably wouldn't know about it.
And you go, the thing.
With the thing. With the comedy.
And then you watch it on iPlayer anyway.
Mm. Anyway. Yeah, so no Doctor Who Christmas special, Cookie. I'm sorry. Pardon you. Oh. Pardon you.
Good point, well made. Yeah. You know, speaking of gaseous outbursts, I've been playing the latest update of No Man's Sky as well, which is
Abyss. That's a good lead in there.
Thank you. Yes, where they've rejigged the underwater regeneration, or terrain and life generation. So
it looks
a little bit more like it looked in the original trailers. Because before, there really wasn't that much to do underwater. Whereas now, you've got more fish, strange alien creatures, you've got giant clams that have pearls, you've got deep sea vents, you've got underwater bases, so you can build those. You've now got a submarine that you can have one of your exocraft, so... I've been quite enjoying playing about with that. Unfortunately, I've been pissing about with it for over 120 hours. I still haven't completed the main quest.
Do main quest.
Yeah, I'm trying to, but it's stuff like improve your standing with the Gek. It's a yeah, but the Gek bloody love me. What the hell am I going to do to increase their my standing with them now?
Marry one of them?
Become a sex icon for them?
It's gonna be No Man's Sky After Dark.
Yeah,
that's what I'm gonna have to do to increase my standing with
no
them,
man's atmosphere.
So to speak.
Oh. Yeah,
dear. Emily, what have you been up to?
But aside from obviously watching Bohemian Rhapsody. We went to a late night screening of Night of the Living Dead last night for Halloween. It was the 50th anniversary edition, which included a little documentary that had George A. Romero's sons and various other horror filmmaking alumni on it, like Guillermo del Toro, Robert Rodriguez, one of the guys from Walking Dead.
Frank Darabont.
Yeah. It was really good. It was. I mean, we've seen Night of the Living Dead before. Like we've seen several times. We've seen the original several times. We've seen the remake several times. We've seen the extended edit several times. We know Night of the Living Dead, but it's such a classic horror film that the opportunity to actually see it on a big screen was one that we decided we didn't want to miss.
In 4K as well.
In 4K.
Because it was remastered.
Yeah, in the last couple of years, which was amazing. It was interesting. It was weird watching a film that was in a 4:3 ratio, though. Because it wasn't widescreen. But it was good seeing it on a big screen. And then remembering how ridiculously useless Barbara is. Yeah, Barbara. Actually, they're all a bit useless. Except for... I want to remember his name. Is it D?
I thought it was Ben. But...
Is it Ben? No.
No.
No, it's Den.
Den.
There you go.
No, I'm going to quickly Google that, but Paul, you say something about it.
But okay. I think to a certain extent, the first film, obviously, The Night of the Living Dead.
Yes, it's Ben.
It is Ben. Waha! Yeah, so there's a lot of... I wouldn't say it's dated particularly. I feel like because it was the very origin of the genre that they could get having zombies stumbling around but also very strong but also very weak but also very fast but also very, you know, dexterous and what, it was a bit of a mix. Like, say, for example, having the original zombie pretty much, you know, chasing after Barbara. Barbara gets in the car, you know, tries to bang on the window for a bit, and then, oh, look, there's a brick there. I'm going to use that. And it's, you know, there's certain bits where it's like...
Yeah, they hadn't narrowed down the lore quite yet, because Dawn of the Dead, which is meant to be set not long after that, they're less capable.
Mm.
But then it does get a bit mixed up, because obviously then you've got Day of the Dead, where you've got that one zombie that's being trained, almost. But it's depicted as taking a lot of effort for that to happen. So, yeah, I don't think they quite narrowed down
the lore, exactly. But, I mean, since it was, you know, kind of in its time, in its context, it was quite a interesting and unique kind of thing, at least to a certain extent.
But also having Dwayne Jones cast as, like, the main protagonist, aside from Barbara, who played Ben.
And having it being a colourblind casting as well. The fact that, you know, the reason that they picked him was not because he was black, not because they'd written him as a black character, but because the actor was the best actor for the role.
And you know what? His acting is some of the best acting. Aside from some of the zombies, he do some very stellar performances, considering that it wasn't a role that really existed much prior to that point. So we watched Night of the Dead. We've been watching the Chilling Adventures?
Yes.
Is it Chilling Adventures, Sabrina?
Yes.
On Netflix. We haven't quite finished what they've released yet, but we've been really enjoying it. I mean, I'm used to love watching the oh-so-tame... was it Nickelodeon that did it?
With Melissa Joan Hart.
With Melissa Joan Hart.
Yes.
That was a favourite after school watch of mine. The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, I appreciate that the characters who are in high school are being played by actors and actresses who actually look like they belong in high school, which is the exact opposite of Riverdale's issues. But am I right in suspecting that, in theory, at least in the comics, Riverdale and
Greendale are close together, yes.
Yeah, they are near.
See, I still like joking to Emily that Greendale also contains the college Greendale from Community
That would be quite funny.
But, yeah, so...
But I'm liking how they've been building up their supernatural lore.
Yes.
Yes.
In Sabrina, it's quite different. it's quite shocking at times as well. Like, there is a lot of shock factor in the series.
I don't know. It's got quite a backlash from the Satanist community and, to a certain extent, paganists as well. I've heard, you know, criticism saying that it's, you know, representing paganism in, like, either a negative or a inaccurate light, and it's like, fair, but by the same token,
they never call themselves pagans. Or Wiccans Sabrina. It's like, we're witches and warlocks of the classic European stereotypical tradition who, like the stereotype, also happen to really like Satan. I don't know, you'd think the Church of Satan, or at least regular Satanists, would have a bit of sense of humour on this.
But instead, they're actually suing them. Because of the statue. The goat statue with, like, one hand pointing towards the sky.
Okay. Maybe the set designer should have researched things a little more before using an actual figure from a religious thing that is not at all hell. Because obviously actual Church of Satan, Satanism, is nothing like what it is on the Netflix show.
See, I wonder about that, because obviously you could show, like, a cross or Star of David on a TV program as kind of set decoration or art to denote or connote that. So, I mean, in terms of copyright infringement, I'm not entirely sure whether it would necessarily be
quite on the same. Yeah, level. But the thing about Church of Satan, that symbol, I think that was only really... it's not out of copyright yet. Whereas...
Oh, right, so it's an age issue.
Yeah, potentially. I would say it was something of the 20th century. At least the one that they're using currently. So, anyway, outside of all these legal issues, it has been a fun watch, and the you actually care a bit about the characters. I think Hilda is amazing. I kind of want to strangle Zelda for being a bitch.
Yes, yeah, very, very different to the... at least Zelda is very different from the Melissa Joan Hart version.
Yeah.
Very, very, very different.
Yeah.
I'll try to think, what else have I been up to other than knitting? Oh, okay, I'm going to talk about a knitting thing, if that's okay. So I finished making a snood, and I've got some yarn left over that I was going to make myself some fingerless gloves with. And the thing is, though, is that... in order to make the gloves, I needed a pattern. So I've got, I bought a pattern. It was like £3 or something through Etsy. And, you know, I thought it would work. I tried it out, knitted it, this one of these fingerless gloves. And even though I definitely followed the pattern, it looked not much like what was actually in the picture. And I've realised that they probably hadn't tested the pattern that they were selling, because that happens. Because, you know, it was an indie. So I've basically decided to completely... now that I know what kind of sizing I need to do, I've basically just... And how it kind of works, I've basically just hacked the pattern, and I've made my own pattern that I'm now working on. Because that's a thing. So, yeah, it's fine. Just kind of annoying, because I spent, like, a good part of yesterday evening before we were sort of heading off to go watch Night of the Live Dead knitting this thing, and it was like, oh, the pattern doesn't actually work. Great. Cool. So, yes, knitting.
You would think that would be a fairly basic thing for them to check.
You think. But it has been nice knitting whilst watching The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. So, there we go. Oh, maybe Supernatural Season 14. I promise this is my last one. Promise. Supernatural Season 14 has had an intriguing start so far. I'm not sure how enamoured I am with it, other than the slightly spoilerific, but not spoilerific, fact that Sam Winchester has had facial hair for once. And it's been glorious. Goodness. It's been absolutely glorious to see him with facial hair. But I can't say much more than that, because it'll get ridiculously spoilery. So, yay!
Other than his facial hair.
and his facial hair. Oh, this week's episode is a homage to horror films. Like, more so than usual. Like, actually, like, a homage to, like, classic kind of, like, slasher types and stuff. So, yeah. Okay. Paul?
Apart from basically watching the same as you, I have also been watching a load of Friday Night Dinner. Which, if you've never seen it before, it's kind of a... It's an interesting comedy with the guy that plays the briefcase wanker out of In Between Us. And Tamsin Grieg and Mark Heap. And it's basically just, you know, kind of two older lads that go round to their parents for, like, you know, kind of Friday evening dinners for, you know, kind of family time. And shenanigans seems to break out every time. I'm really not selling that very well, but it is...
surely not shenanigans.
Indeed, shenanigans.
Shenanigans.
Yep, so Friday Night Dinner. And there was... oh, what was it that I was watching just now? Oh, the there's like a one on All Four, which is with like Steve Mangan being like an online therapist. Is it the Hang-Ups or something?
Oh, yeah. I heard his interview on Six Music, I think it was.
But
sounds interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I've only managed to get through like 1.5 episodes of that so far. But yeah, it's actually quite... quite an interesting kind of setup, really, because most of the story is based around obviously him giving, you know, therapy sessions for, you know, kind of people online, and it's got quite a few celebrities in it, and it's all done in like a, almost like a Skype type way where you can kind of see, you know, kind of Steve Mangan on one side of the screen and the person he's giving therapy to on the other, and you can kind of see their reactions to each other and whatnot. So, yeah. But, yeah, that's obviously on top of what I've been watching with Emily.
Yeah. Is that... So, yeah, that's everything. Is that everything?
I think so.
Okay.
Cool.
All right. Well, that's all we've got time for in this episode. You can say what you think about all of this by tweeting us at Nerds Podcast, or, you know, you could find us on Facebook and comment about it once you've got all of the episode. Do that. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes and Stitcher, should you so wish to have an alternative method of listening to us if you've been doing it for the websites. You can follow the people, because I've forgotten to do that part. So
the people?
We haven't said our byes.
The people.
I'm not people.
Us people. So it is goodbye from...
It's goodbye from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's goodnight from me, Paul, a.k.a. Cookie. You can find me on Twitter as @OneArmed_Cookie.
It's goodnight from me, Paul Blewett. I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlewett.
And it's goodnight from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at EMKingMA. So, yeah, you can find everything over on the website if you want to. Like I said, tweet us at Nerds Podcast if you've got some ideas about whether or not we've got too much comic bookness going on. But if you're happy with it, then that's cool. But I don't know, I'm feeling a bit tired now. A bit tired of the genre. A bit too tired. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, you lot.
Heroes save us. Not gonna stand in the way.